Hello, everyone. Thank you, Jeff, for the introduction. My name is Yuvraj, and today I'll be talking about Soliloquy, which is an architecture to augment the network interfaces of PCs to reduce their energy usage. So if you're one of those people who want to be more energy efficient and be nice to the environment, here on to how to reduce the energy consumption for laptops and desktop PCs. This is a joint work with Steve Hodges, Ranveer Chandra, James Scott, and Victor Bal at Microsoft Research, and then my advisor, Rajesh Gupta at UC San Diego. One sec. Yeah. So we all know that power and energy efficiency are actually key drivers of design of devices today. And this is true even if you look at battery-powered devices such as laptops, where the main goal is how can I make my laptop last the longest possible, given my workload? So you want to improve the battery lifetime. In case of wall-powered devices such as desktops and servers, the motivation is actually different. There is no battery, but the overall goal is how can I make my machine more efficient such that they reduce the energy cost, and as a result, can I reduce the impact of the environment? Now, although both these classes of devices operate in very different power performance regimes, the underlying goal is how can I achieve energy efficiency by doing the most work for the least amount of power or energy? In the purpose of this talk, I will be focusing more on laptop and desktop computers. So although it's a well-known fact that IT equipment actually consumes significant power, most shutdown opportunities are actually rarely used. And I'm sure, you know, the popular press has all been reporting about data centers and the amount of power they consume. So it may appear that it's only the servers that are consuming power. That's actually true, but it's even the normal desktop PCs that are ubiquitous in our enterprises that consume a lot of power. And in fact, studies have shown that a majority of the time these PCs are actually never turned off, even though sleep modes such as sleep and hibernate have existed for a long, long time. And this is true even if you look at home PCs, where most people actually do not turn off their PCs, for example, in the night. And this is actually confirmed by our measurements at UC San Diego in the computer science department. We obviously have a lot of PCs, and a majority of them are actually never put to any low power modes or turned off. And this accounts for a staggering 25% of the total energy bill of our department. So this is actually a big deal to optimize. When we dug deeper, we found out that there's actually various reasons why most people do not turn off their machines when they're not in use. The first one of them is, well, I want to maintain my desktop, so I have a set of applications open, I have my preferences, I want to make sure that they remain that way when I come back the next morning. Then there are other applications. For example, I want to occasionally access my machine. Users want to remotely connect into their PCs, or they want to SSH into it. They have file shares that they want other people to access. Administrators often require PCs to be on so that they can update them, apply patches, et cetera, at the night, right? And then there's this third class of applications, which are actually examples where the applications are long running and users leave them on even when they're not in front of the PC. Think about doing a download of a movie site, for example, Netflix, or you're participating in a BitTorrent download. You could also think about maintaining presence over IM networks, et cetera. Turns out the first class can actually be handled by existing low power modes. We already flipped the lid of a laptop close and it can go to sleep mode. The other two cannot actually be handled by existing sleep modes. And the issue is that saving power actually often runs into usability. And that's because these modes that we have currently are actually incompatible with the use model of these machines. So PCs today are either in an awake state, in which case they're fully active, or they can be in a sleep state, in which case they're completely inactive. The power consumption is a huge difference between either of these states. So you can consume almost 100 times more power when you're active than as compared to when you're in a sleep mode. And the important part to note is this is the lowest power active state that you can be in. It's still consuming orders of magnitude more power than the highest power sleep state. Secondly, from the perspective of other end hosts on the network, the assumption is that the host PC is always on, always connected, which implies that it's always awake and hence is using the energy. What we really want is this new state, right? What we want is a way to provide the functionality of an awake host, except that it uses the power as if it was in sleep mode. We could always obviously resume the host to a fully awake state as and when needed, right? So we're effectively changing the distinction of what you can do in a sleep state as opposed to what you can do in an active state. So think about this as a hybrid state where the objective is, can I make my PC responsive even when it's asleep? So we're combining the best of both worlds. We want to maintain availability in this state across the entire protocol stack. So this includes replying to ARP queries all the way to be able to handle an incoming SSH request, which is an application layer request. And we want to do this without making any changes to the infrastructure. So no changes to the routers, no changes to the switches, no administrator's involvement. And then we do not also want to modify any user behavior. So the user should be able to access the machines and access the resources just like they normally do. Right? But if you remember, I just told you, the PCs take two orders of magnitude different power, but in the sleep state, although you're saving a lot of power, you're really essentially inactive. The key idea that we're exploring in Somniloquy is, can we actually augment this PC with a secondary processor, which is a combination of a lower power CPU, has a little bit of memory, has a little bit of flash storage to store the OS image and some other data, and is extremely low power. What we do want is the secondary processor to fulfill two different requirements. First, it must be functionally similar. So if you look at it, the secondary processor looks awfully lot like a very little computer, right? It has the same components, except that it's using much lower power than the PC. So, and that brings me to the second requirement. It must be much lower power than the host PC when it's inactive. So you can think there's almost two orders of magnitude more difference in power consumption than the secondary processor as compared to the host PC. Now, the obvious place where you could think about putting the secondary processor is the network interface, because it already does some sort of packet processing, right? We're saying, can we actually augment the network interface of the PCs with several more components that allows us this ability to respond to traffic even when the machine is in a sleep state? Effectively, since we are building PCs that talk in their sleep, we have called our architecture Somniloquy. And the secondary interface, the secondary processor that I just talked about, has several characteristics. First, it's on a separate power domain, so and as a result, it remains powered on even when the host PC is using some a low power state. It has a processor, memory, flash storage that I just talked about, and has a network stack. And the block diagram for the various components of the secondary processor are shown there. It also uses the same MAC address and the IP address of the host PC. And this is important because to everybody else on the network, it can masquerade as the host PC itself, even though the PC is actually asleep. The first thing the secondary processor can now do is when the host PC is in a sleep state, it can maintain network reachability in terms of replying to ARP requests. It can maintain DHCP leases, et cetera. So it can maintain network connectivity. For a second class of applications, which actually require the resources of the host, think about an incoming RDP connection, remote desktop connection to your host. You want to remote into your PC, not to the secondary processor. It actually transparently wakes up the PC so that it can handle it. Interestingly, there's this third class of applications where you do not need to wake up the host PC on an incoming request. And we handle these applications by actually keeping the PC in a sleep state and handling those requests on the secondary processor itself. And we do handle these applications using application stubs. I'll go into detail about these. The first class of applications are ones that you wake up the host PC for immediately. And these are examples of stateless applications that do not actually maintain state on a per application basis. Think about an incoming Skype call, remote desktop request, et cetera. For these, the host PC can basically set up any user-defined filter for which it can then be subsequently woken up. And I want to contrast this with a standard that has been around for a while. It's called Wake on LAN, which essentially allows you to wake up a host PC by sending it traffic. And there are two different modes. Either you can send it a specially formed magic packet, in which case it can resume, or you can send it any traffic. The problem with Wake on LAN, even though it has existed for 10 years, is that it's either too impractical, so it causes too many wake-ups, or it affects usability because now you need to have additional infrastructure, need to have router support to actually send this wake on LAN packet, et cetera. So most people actually don't use it. In comparison, when you're using this concept of filters, the filters in Somniloquy can be specified at any layer of the networking stack. So you can say, wake me up on an incoming RDP request from a particular IP address. So it's basically a regular expression on whatever you would like, and you can say, you know, you can even say, wake me up when you see the Usenix Wi-Fi network. So they can be specified at any layer, right? So it's very rich in that sense. The second class of apps are ones that are essentially stateful. So applications in this class actually actively maintain state. Think about a BitTorrent download or a web long-running movie download from Netflix. For each of these, you actually require to understand the application semantics, right? You can't do BitTorrent unless you actually understand the BitTorrent protocol. For these class of applications, we actually need application-specific code on the secondary processor. And this is in contrast with the first class of apps, which are stateless, which do not require any application-specific code to be supported. There is a challenge here, though. I just told you that the secondary processor by design is limited in resources. It has a low power CPU. It has lesser amount of memory. It has a small amount of flash storage, which is why we're getting this energy consumption advantage in the first place, right? And as a result, it really cannot run the full application. So our solution to this is to offload only part of the application, what we call as an application stub or a stub code. So think about the stub being a simplified version of the full application. So you have a full application, you strip out all the GUI parts, all the parts that are actually not needed, because remember, the secondary processor has very little resources and I/O, so you can remove all those components that are actually not needed. And for now, we've actually generated this stub code manually. We are investigating how to do this automatically, but it's an initial exploration. And as proof of concepts, we have generated stubs for three popular applications that we got feedback from users that they would like supported. Home users actually wanted support for BitTorrent, web downloads, as well as maintaining presence over multiple IM networks. Now, let me go over the various states that a SimliLoQui system can be in. This is the figure on the left. And then the various software components that run on the host PC and on the secondary processor to give you a flavor of how the host actually transitions from between states. Initially, the host PC is on and using the network, while the secondary subsystem is actually disabled. If you notice, I haven't given any connection between the two. And this can, the connection can be over any peripheral bus, such as PCI, USB, etc., or as I talked about, it could be as part of the network interface itself. Initially, the host PC is awake, and the secondary processor is disabled. Let's say a timer-based event happens, or the user puts the machine to sleep. A daemon running on the host PC transfers over various parameters for the stateless applications, which include what events it wants the PC to be woken up for, and then for the application stubs, it transfers over the information such as credentials, etc., that are required for the application stub to be active. At this point, the host PC finishes its transition to go to sleep, and then the secondary processor is active at this point. It can now reply to ICMP echo responses and ARP queries, etc. Subsequently, when a wake-up request happens, for example, an incoming connection, the secondary processor wakes up the PC, transfers over any divergence of state that may have happened, for example, if the IP address changed, etc., and then, the secondary processor can be disabled, and the host PC is active again. Now, of course, when we went about implementing SimliLoQui, we realized that there is no current network interface that allows us to add this low-power processor, etc. So the closest that we got was, okay, can we build our own prototype? That's external, but it gives us the same functionality. So we built a prototype using the GumSticks platform. It has a lower-power processor and has a full TCP/IP stack. The reason we chose this platform over, you know, various other platforms possible is that it has a small form factor, and it has this interesting USB interface, right? Most PCs have USB interfaces, and this allowed us to actually build a prototype that we can use even now. So machines without this augmented NIC can actually use SimliLoQui, because basically if you have a USB interface, you can use it. And we use the USB interface for various functionalities such as sleep detection, waking up the host, getting power from the host, etc. We built two prototypes for SimliLoQui, the wired prototype for a desktop PC, and then a wireless prototype for a laptop. And we have two versions of these prototypes. The one NIC version follows from the initial vision of having this augmented NIC. Remember I said that we want all the traffic to go through this augmented network interface. So in the one NIC case, all the traffic, whether the host is awake or disabled, goes through the secondary processor. The two NIC case came about because we realized that there is a performance limitation in our current prototype because we're limited to the speeds of transfer over the USB bus. As a result, the 2NIC version goes over this limitation and uses the PC's internal network interface when it's awake, and then uses the secondary processor's network interface when it's in a sleep mode. So this is a picture of our prototype. It's not actually this big, and I can show it to you later. There are the various components of it are marked. So we have a processor board. You have some flash storage. So this is required for the stubs so that you can store data. There's a USB interface that you can get power from as well as communicate with the host. And then we have a custom board. There's two boards, the bottom board and the the small board is a custom board that we've built that provides us the functionality to wake up the host, know its status when it transitions between states, and also for debugging purposes. This is pure. The two interfaces are purely for our prototype and useful for debugging. Eventually, you could expect only a single interface would work. Once we have the prototype, we set about evaluating it. There are three goals that we wanted to make sure that our prototype fulfills. First, it should maintain network reachability. Second, for stateless applications, we wanted to measure any increase in application level latency that is observed. Since the PC is asleep, you now need to wake up the PC. There is this added latency when you use Soliloquy. So we wanted to quantify that for various prototypes. Finally, we wanted to get a detailed power profile for both the secondary processor, which is the GEM6 in our case, and the host PCs, laptops, desktops, various different versions, and then estimate the energy savings for both of these classes of devices. Finally, for stateful applications, we wanted to measure the energy savings when you're using Soliloquy for that application as opposed to not. So let's see how Soliloquy actually maintains reachability. The chart shows the time series of the ICMP echo response latencies. In the beginning, the host PC is actually replying to the ping requests. The y-axis is just latency in milliseconds, and the x-axis is time. At some point, the host PC transitions to sleep, and then the GEM6 responds on behalf of the host, and then subsequently when it wakes up, it continues responding. If you notice, there is this break, 4 seconds and 5 seconds, and this is purely due to the state transitions from an awake state to the sleep state. So we don't actually start, the secondary processor does not start responding to the request until the PC has completed its transition, because you want to prevent race conditions. We imagine, like, hopefully Windows and other OSs will try to optimize these sleep transitions more aggressively, and as a result, this latency should decrease further. Now, since I want to now measure the setup latency, which the additional setup latency when you use Soliloquy. This graph shows the various prototypes, the wired 1NIC, wired 2NIC, and the wireless 2NIC for different applications. The green bar shows the latency if you're using Soliloquy. The pink bar shows the latency if you're not using Soliloquy and just using the host itself. So the difference between the two in seconds is the additional latency that Soliloquy causes. And for all of these applications, we actually measure the user perceived time. So the time that the user initiates the request, and then finally when the user interface or the UI pops up. If you notice, across all applications, our additional latency is between 3 seconds to 10 seconds, and a majority of this is the latency to actually wake up the PC. And we note that as a proportion of the total latency of the session, as a proportion of the length of the total session, this is actually okay. So think about you remoting into your machine, the session is probably going to last more than 3 to 10 seconds, right? So in that case, this additional setup latency, which is a one-time fact, is easily amortized over the length of the session. Second, we wanted to measure the power consumption of the secondary processor in order to make sure that the processor itself does not actually take more power than the host under no circumstance. So I've given various configurations and their appropriate power consumption numbers, and there are more numbers in the paper. The important part is, both for the wired version and the wireless version, our prototype consumes pretty much the same amount of power as the host PCs, laptop or the desktop for the wired and the wireless versions in the respective sleep states. And in no case are the prototypes actually consuming more than 1.6 watts, and which is substantially lower than what the host PCs do. Next, we measured the power consumption of the desktop PC that we have in various modes, and there was two objectives in this. First, we wanted to enable all the power consumption features that are present in a normal desktop. So this is a desktop which is about 2 years old, has a Core 2 Duo processor, so we disabled one of the two cores, we lowered the frequency to the lowest possible in order to find out what is the lowest value that you can actually get without using any of our schemes, right? So the power consumption does drop, so from 102 watts, and all these numbers are when the machine is idle, it's not actually doing anything, the power consumption drops from 102 watts to 93 watts. Unfortunately, this is still 2 orders of magnitude more than when you're in a sleep state, right? And then the graph on the right shows the transition of this desktop PC with the power consumption from one state to the other. If you use Soliloquy for this desktop, the power consumption drops from about 100 watts to less than 5 watts. The less than 5 watts comes because you take the power consumption in the suspend state as well as the power consumption of the secondary processor. Of course, the energy savings are dependent on the use model. How often is the machine going to be in this state? How often does the machine need to be woken up? And assuming a 45-hour work week, this translates to the energy savings using Simliloquy translate to about an annual $56 of savings, and about 10% of, and this translates to about 10% of the average global individual's carbon footprint. In laptops, the goal is, of course, to extend the battery lifetime, and I've plotted the same amount, the same experiment as the desktop. Put the laptop in different states of operation. So the laptop is in sleep state. The normal state is when the laptop is not using any power save, any power consumption optimizations. The baseline is when I have turned off the screen, I have disabled the backlight, I have basically enabled all the power saving features that you can have possible. So if you look, the battery lifetime is shown in parentheses. If you're using the laptop normally, this is about 4 hours. This dumps to about 6 hours if you're using, if you enable all the power saving features. Sleep gives you about 88 hours, but if you use Simliloquy, your power consumption is almost 10x. Sorry, your battery lifetime is almost 10x than baseline. And the important part for both the laptop and the desktop is that in the base, in a Simliloquy state, the PCs are actually getting the functionality of the baseline. So you're getting the functionality of the baseline, except that the power consumption is almost similar to the sleep state. So this is effectively what we were trying to build, right? We were trying to build this hybrid state where we can get the best of both worlds. Now, for the laptop and the desktop, the numbers that are shown are power consumption numbers. Energy consumption is power over a period of time, and of course, the energy consumption is what you really care about when you're looking at when you look at how much money you have to pay or the battery lifetime. So for that, we actually use the traces from Sergio, who's going to talk next, and we use their traces for the desktop PCs, which is essentially 24 PCs in various modes of operation, on, off, sleep, and idle. And I'll let Sergio describe the details about this experiment. Basically, it classifies the time of each of these desktops in various states. And we bin this data into three categories, primarily based on the idle time that each of these users see. So users that have whose PCs are idle less than 25% of the time, all the way to users whose PCs are idle more than 75% of the time. So depending on the bin you fall in, the energy savings using Simliloquy translate from between 38% to 85%. Just to be clear, so if you're in this bin where your PC is idle for more than 75% of the time, you would be using only 15% of your current energy consumption. If you recall, I mentioned that the third class of application that Simliloquy allows are ones that can be run even when the PC is in a sleep state. So in order to evaluate this, I'll show you a graph about the web download stub, which is doing a long-running download either using the host, this is given by the gray line, versus using Simliloquy, which is given by the blue line. This graph is a time series in seconds, and then the y-axis is the power consumption. And the way this stub works is the flash size is set to about 200 megabytes. So as soon as this 200 megabytes of flash on the secondary processor fills up, it wakes up the PC, transfers the data that it has, and then goes back to sleep. So if you see, if you use the host for the download, you're basically using about 100 watts continuously to do the download. If you use Simliloquy, the host PC starts off downloading, transitions to a Simliloquy state, continues the download. When the flash fills up, it wakes up the PC, transfers what it has, and then goes back to sleep. So effectively, the difference between the area under the two curves, which is basically energy, shows the amount of energy you actually save. And for this case, we save almost 92% over using just the host PC for the download. To summarize, I've talked to you today about Simliloquy, which is an architecture that augments the network interface of PCs to make them much more energy efficient. I've shown that using Simliloquy, you can actually maintain reachability and availability transparently. And the power consumption in the Simliloquy state is similar to that of being in a pure sleep state. I've also shown you the design of an incrementally deployable prototype that you can use right now, which does not require any changes to the infrastructure or the application servers. And I've shown that for both laptops and desktops, you can get demonstrable energy savings if you're using the Simliloquy state. Now, there are other details in the paper that I haven't actually talked about in the interest of time. Primarily, we've given insights in the paper about how to actually build these application stubs, right? and this would give some hints to an application designer on how to go about designing these stubs. Secondly, we've also presented a model about the energy savings and validated that model using real measurements, and which basically allows any designer to actually predict the sort of energy saving they can expect from their application. And I invite you to actually read the paper or come and talk to me to get more ideas about those two components. Thank you for listening, and I can now take your questions. You can also come and find me if you want to see the hardware.
Microsoft, I think in Vista, they had a feature where they had a small screen attached to the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
So where you can check your email and do simple stuff. So how is this different from the feature in Vista?
That's a good question. That feature is called Windows Sideshow.
Yeah.
And the feature is sort of you have a two-screen approach. You have a laptop which is closed, and then you have something at the back of it, right, which remains open. Unfortunately, it's not active. Right. What it happens is that the display at the back only shows you the information, such as your email or anything, before the laptop actually went to sleep. So it does not keep the network connection alive or et cetera. So it's not updating. Like you don't get any, it's not real time. It doesn't update if you get a new email, et cetera. That information is purely like something static before you put your machine to sleep.
Okay.
So you could imagine like putting some Niloqui and then augmenting that functionality and actually making it active, for example.
Okay, thank you.
Fahad Ogar from CMU. Can you comment on why you have this design constraint of only making changes to the client and not making changes to the network? Because it seems that in many scenarios, for example, like enterprise networks, mm-hmm. it may actually be more feasible to make changes to the network in the form of a modified proxy rather than changing thousands of hosts. So can you comment on that?
That's a great point. We're actually working on it. Turns out for individual desktops and laptops, Niloqui is the way to go, right? Trying to convince enterprise administrators to do anything is a little harder, right? So I do see what you're saying. You're giving the cost argument, right? For cost reasons, it might be better to have a dedicated machine, et cetera, to do that, right? So we're working on it. For individual users, I think Niloqui is the way to go. It's not like adding a separate machine, because that adds a lot of other issues such as security and who manages that machine, who does what, whether it's in the router, whether it's in the switches. Anything that actually changes the network infrastructure in terms of the switches and the routers has a huge overhead in actually getting it implemented and deployed.
Hi, Micah Brodsky, MIT. I think it's really cool that someone, particularly you, finally took a whack at this problem. I was wondering about an alternative way of doing it, which might have some advantages. So you presented a very black and white picture of sort of, you know, lowest idle state versus sleep state. But there's a whole lot that goes into suspending and resuming from sleep that may not well be necessary. I'm sure other people know this better than I, but there's things like you have to notify every application, potentially give them a veto opportunity, and this code is probably swapped out because it hasn't been used since the last time you put the thing to sleep. Then once that's done, you have to launch the lock and login screen, and you have to notify every device driver. All this stuff doesn't actually need to be done if you don't fully resume. That is, you go to full sleep, and then you resume to a zombie state where maybe you have selected pages locked into memory so that you can run some application code, but you don't resume all the devices. You just resume your network adapter, for example. Have you looked at anything like that, or do you know how feasible it would be to build a zombie state?
So that's a good question. So you're saying, can you actually go, the OS just goes into a doze state, just
right.
Like your idle timer expires and it just suddenly dozes, right? The unfortunate thing in current design of systems is you have either or, right? If you want to keep something on, you got to keep the north bridge, the south bridge, you got to keep all
right.
the chipsets on.
You could power cycle. You could...
You know,
yeah. But it's an interesting one, no?
Muneeb Ali, Princeton. So I was wondering that you mentioned latency as one of the overhead of the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that comes to my mind is that when you're sleeping and you wake up, there's actually some energy costs associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
Your disk needs to spin up. And also, if your processor or your network interface is sleeping, there is some energy cost when you boot things up.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on your traffic pattern, for example, if it's a BitTorrent protocol and you're getting a lot of probes all the time, right, so you might actually end up waking up and going back to sleep a lot. And in the worst case scenario, you might actually end up spending more energy than you would otherwise, mm-hmm. right? So you mentioned that we're not looking into adapting applications, but I have this feeling that sooner or later you would run into kind of like traffic scheduling problems. So have you ever thought about that? Or
so all our results actually count for the cycling of the energy, right? So if you turn on and turn off, if you looked at the power consumption graphs, there is an initial spike for about 4 seconds or 3 seconds, right? Unfortunately, it's not that much, right? So as long as the granularity of wake-ups is not once every 2 minutes or once every minute, right, that's fine, right? And in Subniloquy is not trying to do this frequent wake-ups. If you recall, for BitTorrent, we were saying, hey, let the secondary processor run even when the machine is in a sleep state. Don't wake it up unless you have to, right? So for the 200 megabyte cache, right, it had wake-ups every 10 minutes or so. Like, that was just to demonstrate that the PC wakes up, transfers what it has, and goes back to sleep, right? We put a larger cache, the PC didn't wake up for an hour, right? So I don't think it will cause that frequent wake-up.
I'll take it offline because sure. we did similar stuff with wireless, and over there, there's a significant cost attached. I'll take this offline.
Sure.
All right, very brief. Some of the Cornell. So I understand putting this CPU and flash on a NIC is easy to prototype. But you mentioned, like, with the two NIC case, you have there's this latency because you need to do this bridging. Have you considered doing more, I guess, how much savings do you think you can get if you just move these things more into the main motherboard so you don't have to do a whole lot of switching?
Can you just repeat the question?
All right, I'll take it offline.
Yeah, so eventually that would be nice, right? So you're saying not on an external piece, but something on the PC itself, right?
Yeah.
So in my architecture, I said it's not the connection can be any peripheral bus, right? It can be on the NIC, it can be part of the chipset. The important part in designing anything is it should be such that it can be serviced from a separate supply that does not require all the chipsets and everything to be on. Right, so you have an effective core or little subsystem that can reside on any part of the PC.
I understand. So so the two NIC solution is just a temporary thing, and you're in for the one NIC solution then, right?
Yes, the two NIC is just to deal with performance issues right now.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.